government to order, and we are going to do two public hearings this morning. I'm going to get started with a public hearing on House Bill 2667, and so I open a public hearing, and we have Senator Ringo here to kick things off, and then we will just basically go right down the list of people that have signed up to testify. Senator, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. For the record, I'm Senator Charlie Ringo from Senate District 17, and I'm here in support of House Bill 2667. And there's some history with this bill I want to explain. This issue was first brought to me by a taxicab driver who lives in the Alloa area of Washington County named Alexei Cassis. And he's back here with a number of his fellow taxi drivers. And he explained to me that there's a problem that is a difficulty for him and just raises an inefficiency in the way taxis are regulated in the Portland metro area. And that is that he can pick up a ride in the Beaverton, Hillsboro, Washington County area, take that ride to downtown Portland or maybe to the Portland airport, but they're not allowed to take a return fare because they're not licensed in the city of Portland. Okay? They receive their licensing out in Washington County. So they take somebody to the airport. And even if that person says, can you pick me up when I fly back in tomorrow, they have to say no. We can't do that. And they have to take their taxi back empty. Well, obviously, Metro was set up to handle regional issues, particularly regional transportation issues. And it's what I passed out here is a cover letter, as you can see, it's dated April 26, 2001, to Jim Francisconi, who's a Portland City Commissioner, about the taxi issue. On the third page, you'll see the beginning of what they call the white paper concerning the regionalization of taxi licensing. And at the bottom, you can see in the indent quote where it really gets to the heart of it. It says, let's say a driver from Beaverton or Gresham or Hillsboro takes a passenger to Portland International Airport. Because that driver and his or her company is not licensed in Portland, it is illegal to pick up a customer for the return ride. This white paper was put together about 2 years ago, and it recognized a problem, and it proposed a solution. And the solution that it proposed was making Metro responsible for the permitting and licensing of taxis on a regional basis. You know, and obviously the thinking is transportation is a regional issue. Taxi permitting ought to be handled on a regional basis. So this was put together 2 years ago. Mr. Cassian came to me about 2 years ago, and for 2 years I've been trying to get Metro to do something about this, and so has Mr. Cassian. I'd like to pass out another set of... What I'm passing out now is just excerpts from my file. It's my effort to push this issue. And as you can see on the very... Well, I'll wait till these are passed out. Again, this packet is just a series of letters related to this issue. But on the top, May 1st, 2001, City of Portland is responding to my letter that I sent on behalf of Mr. Cassian, sitting in the back. And you can see it gradually moves forward where everybody's saying, yes, we need to do this, we need to do this. Everybody I talk to, whether it's the City of Portland, whether it's Metro, whether it's City of Beaverton, Washington County, everybody thinks it's a good idea. But nobody seems to, they can't get off the ground and get it done. And that's what I find so frustrating. And that's where I think this is a real failure of government. And I think this is government unresponsiveness at its most serious, where everybody thinks this has to be done, but nobody will get it done. Now, if you flip to about the fourth page here, there's a letter, and this is my file copy. It was on my letterhead. It's dated November 27, 2001. It was signed by 5 Washington County legislators. Tom Hart, Tom Brian Deckert, Mark Cass, and me, and we all said to the Metro Councilors, we urge you to solve this problem. Okay? they write back and say, well, thank you, we're looking at it. They had a couple hearings on this, and it's simply not getting done. I met with the head of Metro, David Bragdon, in January of this year. I believe it was January 2nd or 3rd. And I asked him, I said, David, I've been pushing you on this for a couple years. I said, I'm inclined to introduce legislation just to require Metro to do this. And David Bragdon said, fine with me. That's a good idea. He said, just make it, yeah, make us do this. He said, one of his concerns is he would want the system set up so that they would be able to charge a permitting fee sufficient to support the its own program, okay, so that they don't have to pull money out of one of their general funds. I said, that's fine. I don't see that being a problem. So David Bragdon supports this legislation. And again, as far as I can tell, nobody opposes it. Except this is what I think you're going to hear today. I think you're going to hear representatives from Metro and Portland saying, we need to look at this more. We suggest you set up a working group. And as what I'm asking you to do is say, no, you've had 2 years, and I would really appreciate it if you just pass out this legislation. And if there are details to be worked out, it can be done between now and when the bill gets over to the Senate. Or they can be worked out between now and when the bill becomes effect, which goes into effect, which would be January 1st, 2004. Okay? So I think if there's details to be worked out, that's fine. There's time to work those details out. But I would really appreciate it if this committee would look at the local government and say, no, you shall be responsive. You shall solve this problem. And we're going to pass this legislation. I really appreciate your attention to this issue. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Ringo? Representative Kitts?
Senator, thank you for being here today, and thank you for your diligence on this. I know you've been in my office talking with me about it. It's a Washington County problem. It's a Washington County legislator. I would agree with you. I just want to, this is dated April 26th of 2001. Is this your first correspondence?
I think prior. It says May 1st?
No, I'm sorry. Is it April 26th, 2001?
That's about the first piece that I have. You'll note that this other one says May 1st, 2001, which is a response to my letter of April 11th, 2001. I think it's safe to say that in the spring of 2001 is when I first started working on this.
So literally 2 years this has been in the process, and they've been sitting on it.
Yeah, and the thing that I find surprising is everybody agrees it's a good idea. I mean, the white paper that Metro did says, yes, taxis should be permitted on a regional basis. They just can't seem to get off the dime and get it done. And that's what this bill does. It just says they shall get it done, and the bill becomes effective. There's no emergency clause on the bill, so it becomes effective January 1st, 2004.
Thank you.
And again, the director, David Bragdon, told me he's fine with this idea.
Okay. Other questions? No? Okay. Senator, thank you. Do you know, does Washington County license taxis?
You know, I think they do license taxis. I don't think it's a big issue out there because in Washington County they don't hover around certain pieces of business, like around big hotels, for example, around the Portland Airport. So in Portland, it's a very competitive issue to get a taxi permitting. You may hear testimony about that. I think they do license in Washington County, but it's not really enforced, and people don't seem to pay attention to it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. I don't know who S Man is, but if they would come forward, please. And you guys are kind of all together, aren't you? How about if we say, have you come up as a panel? S Man, Ray Miles, Mike Pierce, and whoever's here from Beaverton City. Cap. Is that you?
Somebody signed up for
Beaverton
Taxi Cab,
and
that would
be
the task force.
Oh, okay. That'd be fine. Okay. Why don't you come forward? Go ahead and come forward.
This is my daughter. She helped me because I have my baby wings.
Hi, my name is Stella Cassian, so I'm just going to be reading this on behalf of my father.
Okay.
Please allow me to remind you of the situation that is presently plaguing the taxi industry. Currently, there are 5 Portland-based taxi companies that have monopolized the working opportunities in Portland. These same companies can also be found working in the Beaverton area. In other words, Portland-based taxi companies are working everywhere, while Beaverton-based taxi companies are only working in Beaverton. I'm asking you to assess the situation and ask yourselves, who's benefiting here? The correct answer should be the citizens. Unfortunately, the only ones benefiting from this type of service are the Portland-based companies. We need to stop thinking of the companies and focus on the needs of the people. People living in Portland are able to take a taxi from Portland to Beaverton and return to Portland in the same car, while people living in Beaverton taking a Beaverton taxi to Portland are forced to call for a separate Portland-based taxi to return home. This type of situation is often confusing and costly to the Beaverton citizen, not to mention time-consuming and unfair. I am proposing that instead of pushing back the solution to this problem for the third time, that Beaverton-based companies be granted the same working opportunities as Portland-based companies. This would solve the discrimination that Beaverton taxi companies and citizens are faced with daily. Senator Charlie Ringo brought up this decision 2 years ago and has been trying to end the discrimination for the citizens that voted for him. I hope that today a fair decision will finally be made. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Any questions for Representative Nelson and then Representative Kitts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kassan and Ms. Kassan. I just want to commend you for being the speaker today, and I think that is really great, and I love to see young people get involved in government, and that's how you make things happen. And I'm just curious, is there a difference in the fares that is charged by the Portland versus the Beaverton taxis?
Our price is $1.50 per mile, and in Portland is $1.80 per mile.
Thank
so
you.
We are a little bit cheaper.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gibbs.
My question is this. If you were to leave the Portland airport, drop somebody off at Portland airport driving back home, so you didn't pick up a fare because right now you can't. If you were driving off Highway 84, went downtown to get on Highway 26, and somebody were in front of the Benson Hotel hailing a taxi, could you simply not, you would have
no.
to simply drive by?
We cannot pick up nobody because $250 fine.
So it's not just the airport. It's really prohibiting you from doing business that you're licensed and so on and so forth to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. I do have one question. We may hear some testimony today about the industry, the for hire industry being saturated. Would you say that that's true or not true? Or
saturated, do you mean by there's too many cabs?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think if we have some competition, it's going to be better for customers. We don't have to think about drivers. We have to think about customers, about the best service, and like that.
Okay.
It's going to be more drivers than needed. Well, a win company who have better service, better cars, cleaner, and like that.
Okay.
So going to be, anyway, it's going to be better for customers.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry, but we don't take comments from the audience. You have to come up and testify, and I'll give you an opportunity in just a minute. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Sukhinder Mann. I own the yellow cab in city of Portland, but in Washington County. I have to take the license from the city of Portland and other city of Beaverton. My address is in Portland, but I live in Washington County. And I'm still illegal if I'm going to pick up a customer from Portland. All the regulations made in the city of Portland, they are all in the favor of the cab companies, only limited people. The young lady sitting right behind me, Ray Miles, general manager for Broadway Cab Company. That cab company doesn't think about the driver. Doesn't matter if the driver gets shot on the job or driver makes any money or no. They have the whole control. I will say, if you guys will pass the law, let open the market, let the drivers come and go if they feel like it. It will be more big competition, better for the public. Competition not only the quality of service, also the quality of the price and the quantity of the service and the faster service and the safe drivers. But right now, nobody cares about that. Our request is, if you will open that market, let the metro take the charge for that, then it will be better for the citizen, environment, and the cost, then the more public can afford the taxes. But the companies are doing their business in Portland, most of them doing pretty rudely, badly, and like whatever they want to do. Their way of behavior is take it or leave it. Every year and a half we are losing our driver, died with gunshot. Few weeks ago we lost one of our driver in Portland. I'm sorry, I forgot his name. He have a 5-year-old kid, about 28 years old wife. Who is responsible for that? City or the cab company? City want to put a cameras in the car, but company don't want to spend the money. The company is saying, oh, let the driver spend $2,000 on the camera. But everything is in the control in the companies. Let open the market for the driver. If the city is saying it's, they are called independent contractors. All the requirements which helps a person to be an independent contractor is not working properly, because 80% of the stuff is controlled by the cab companies. One person buy a cab company for $3 million and he makes his $3 million in 3 years and then resell the company for the same amount of money. A general manager of a company is making $125,000 a year. For what? Screwing up the public or screwing up the driver? If that money will distribute it into the drivers, the economy will get much better. Environment get much cleaner. There will be less crime. My request is just let them open the market. This is not a research to develop the diamonds. It's just cars. 99.5% cars are using in the taxi industry is made in U.S. Nobody is buying any Japanese or German cars to use in the taxi. I'm living in the United States since last 22 years. I was a teenager kid when I came to this country. Let the driver have their dreams. Then they can send their kids to the good schools. Instead of one person is making more than $200,000 just screwing up the drivers because city's law is letting them do that, it's not fair. Even the companies control the prices. If one company says, okay, we have made a deal in Beaverton, a company called VTEC, which is $37 to the airport, where the taxi fare comes $52.
Okay.
And I think that's about it. And I will appreciate for your time and the help for the cab drivers and the taxi industry. And we hope if you will pass the law, it will do good for hundreds of people and hundreds of families. We live with the danger, with the cash in our pocket, without a gun. We don't have any insurance. Cab companies don't provide any insurance. Not to their cars, not to the driver. I got into an accident 3 years ago. Got a broken neck. Still in the dispute, insurance company doesn't want to pay that. But taxi insurance company don't have any insurance for the driver. I have to go to the other party's insurance. And if he don't have it, somehow, I don't have any choice to file a bankruptcy. That's not only my story. There are more than 400 drivers on the road. Broken neck, I can probably handle it. The young lady, 20 years old, have a 5-year-old car kid. She lost her husband. I pray to God, God will bless her, give her more strength to live her life. That's about it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay? Thank you. Go ahead and stand down and go ahead and have the two of you come forward. So this one's... Why don't you go ahead, whenever you're ready.
Hi, I'm Ray Miles with Broadway Cab. And, you know, I guess I'm just here to I do kind of oppose this, what I see as a simplistic approach to this. But I do support the bigger picture, the longer-term study of Metro regulating taxis in the Portland area. I think, really, one of the things we need to take a strong look at is why the regulations are there in the first place. And it isn't, you know, to ensure people are picked up at the airport or to ensure transportation between Beaverton and Portland. We typically, you know, the industry could function fine providing that type of service. Regulation ensures that taxi cabs are a common carrier, that persons with disabilities have equal access to them, that persons that require a wheelchair have an accessible cab, that somebody who needs picked up in what's perceived to be a rougher part of town and is only going 8 blocks to a grocery store gets a ride. And I don't think that's what people have in mind. They have in mind the big fares, but the purpose behind regulation is to ensure that everybody can get a cab. And it may sound simple, but it's very difficult. It's very challenging. I think one of the things that the city of Portland has grappled with and is really making some strides toward over the last 10 years is recognizing that the cab industry is a lot more than yellow cars at this point. Over the last 10 years in Portland and across the country, we've seen a proliferation of executive cars that are really taxi cabs, only they're painted black, and they don't have the burden of providing 24-hour service 7 days a week. They don't have to provide accessible wheelchair accessible cabs, and they don't have to provide the short trips in the rough part of town that nobody, or not nobody, but that are a little bit more challenging to cover. So at a minimum, I just think that the regulation has got to be changed so that it addresses private for hire ground transportation, not just taxi cabs. It needs to encompass executive cars, it needs to encompass shuttle service, and it needs to encompass specially attended transportation vehicles, which really have just sprouted up over the last 10 years. Secondly, I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Buffon. Before you move on from that point, if we were to pass this bill out today, couldn't Metro ensure that all of those various types of transportation were provided for?
You know, I'm not really sure exactly what the process is from here. I don't know.
I'm assuming Broadway provides those type of accessible vehicles. Do they?
Yes.
And you would still be in the game to be able to pull up if Metro controlled, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Then the second point I was wanting to make is another concern of mine, and like I said, I really don't understand the legislative process entirely, but another concern of mine is if the cities don't buy into this, I'm not sure we're accomplishing what we set out to in that. You know, will the city of Portland, I mean, I'm concerned we're just adding an inefficient layer of regulation on top of what's already there. I'm not sure that the city of Portland will choose to not regulate. So I'm concerned that the city of Portland can still say you have to be a permitted company to come in here. I'm not certain this will accomplish the objective anyways, unless I think it can if there's a deliberate process where you get buy-in from the cities, but I don't think that's occurred yet. So I think everybody agrees it's a good idea, but it's kind of a complicated equation, and it's going to take some time, and I don't think we're there yet. So I'm afraid we're just going to add a layer that doesn't really accomplish what anybody intended to begin with.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
One second. Representative Nelson.
Excuse me. Would it be possible to ask Senator Ringo, who is also an attorney, if the weight of this bill would supersede a decision by the city in answer to
Ray Miles.
Right. To Ms. Miles' statement?
Well, we can certainly ask Representative Ringo to do that. However, if we are wanting a legal opinion, it is going to be much better if we go to Legislative Council and ask them for the opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then just one other quick question. I'm assuming that this bill would not have been written by LCO if it would not be lawful if it were passed, I guess.
Well, we would certainly hope that. Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Mike Pierce. I'm president of Pacific Trails Incorporated. Where Pacific Trails is a common carrier licensed by the federal government, the Federal Highway Traffic Transportation Service Transportation Board, to conduct charter operations or any passenger operations within the state of Oregon and interstate. We do operate a taxi service in the state of Oregon, in particular in Washington County area. We're federally licensed, we do not come under the jurisdiction of the state or metro or the City of Portland current taxi cab regulations. We stay underneath the federal regulations. Our concern is that the committee or the bill recognize that there are federal carriers that actually operate within the area that are exempted from state law by 49 U.S.C.A. 14501.
Can you say that again?
49 U.S.C.A. 14501.
Thank you.
That law basically says and prohibits the states and any political subdivision therein from enforcing any law or rule of law having effect of law regarding rates, routes, or service. That's a pretty broad definition. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, U.S. Ninth Circuit Court in Los Angeles or San Francisco, has in fact ruled in a case Tosher versus the City of Santa Ana, California, in favor of the companies that law is enforceable by the Ninth Circuit Court. We are in favor of this bill, providing that it has a noted exception that there are federal carriers, federally licensed carriers operating within the area that would be exempted from it. We have to meet safety requirements at the federal level and insurance level at the federal level as defined by federal law. The current taxi cabs within the state of Oregon, if you will, that are not federally regulated, don't meet those requirements. I would submit that to the committee that it may be in the interest of public safety to have the law written in such a way that, or the bill written in such a way, that all of the companies have to meet the federal requirements for insurance, vehicle inspections, safety, and maintenance. In our case, this is done by the Department of Transportation. State of Oregon Department of Transportation. They come out and inspect our vehicles. They check our insurance. They're required on file. And I know our requirements are higher than that of the other companies operating within the area. We have to carry a $5 million minimum policy. But that's basically all. We're in favor of it. We just would like to be aware that there's federal carriers operating.
For example, with since you're under federal jurisdiction as opposed to state jurisdiction, if you take with your taxi in Beaverton, for example, if you take a fare to the Portland Airport, can you pick up a fare at
Yes.
the Portland Airport and return?
Yes, we are absolutely unrestricted with respect to rates, routes, or service. We can operate anywhere we want. In any vehicle we want, any size vehicle, or in any manner we want.
Okay.
By federal law, that 49 U.S.C.A. 14501.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Kitts?
Do these local, I understand you're federal, do these local taxi companies have any compliance when it comes to safety or inspection or license requirements, or are they just, I mean, obviously I don't think that I could just simply put a taxi sticker on the side of my car and go operate.
she can answer this better than I can because I don't play in that arena, but they do have, the city of Portland has in fact put rules, regulations for compliance in effect. I don't know exactly what all those rules and regulations are because I don't deal with them. But yes, they've worked very diligently on levels of service, compliance of the cars, what qualifies, what doesn't, what license provisions you have to meet to be able to obtain a license from the city currently. And those, I believe, should remain in effect, if not be strengthened.
Is that follow-up?
Follow-up.
Is that uniform just to the city of Portland, or are all taxi companies required to adhere to a certain level of compliance before they operate as a taxi company?
If you're talking statewide, no. There are areas, cities, counties, that are unregulated totally. They can just go off and, as long as they've got insurance requirements, minimum automobile insurance requirements, they can go run.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pierce, why did you choose to be a federal carrier versus a local carrier?
We have multiple operations. We run big charter coaches, charter motor coaches, charter bus company.
Oh, bus.
Okay. We run limos and we have taxis. We're trying to form ourselves into a total transportation company that handles all aspects.
Follow up.
And what would be the cost of your license?
Our license from the federal government?
Uh-huh.
$300 application fee, and then that's actually the cost of the license. From that point on, you have to meet the minimum insurance requirements and the federal requirements, safety compliance, insurance, and a DOT permit in Oregon if you want it, and that's another $300.
Follow up.
And Ms. Miles, what would be the cost to get licensed in the state or in Portland?
The city of Portland charges $100 per vehicle per year.
Representative Mabry.
For Ms. Miles. Do I understand one of your concerns correctly is that the bill requires Metro to regulate, but it doesn't take away Portland's ability to regulate, and therefore you're concerned that if Metro regulates, Portland may continue to regulate and you have two layers. Is that the essence of your concern?
Yes, that is one of my concerns, that we'll just add another kind of inefficient layer on top of a layer that will continue to exist, because Portland does have unique challenges, I think, because we do have a lot of really short duration trips. You know, we have these great neighborhoods that result in the grocery store only being six blocks away from a home, but that doesn't mean the person can actually navigate those six blocks without a taxi cab to get there. So, anyway.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to ask you to go ahead and stand down then. And Cheryl Noonan. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Sorry about my voice. I've got a little bit of a cold, so I'm a little bit raspy here. I'm the operations manager at Green Cab, and I am here in opposition to this bill. And I would just like to address some of the comments that some of the other folks have made regarding somebody picking up in Beaverton and dropping off in Portland and then not being able to take a customer back. Everybody is able to apply for a license, so Green Cab applies for the license in Beaverton or the license in Gresham or the license in Hillsboro in order to be able to transport those customers. So everybody is open to do that. Now, whether they're actually granted those from the individual location is a matter of the city's or individual county's qualifications if they're met. But everybody has the opportunity to apply for that Green Cab as well. There was a comment made by Senator Ringel that everyone thinks this is a good idea. And you've already heard from a couple people that have said that they don't think it's a good idea, Ray Miles and myself being a couple people. And the reason why she stated, and essentially my reasons are almost the same, it's the double layer of regulations. And Portland has a lot of special needs, being a different type of city than Beaverton or Hillsborough or Gresham or some of the smaller cities. There are a lot of different types of customers that need to be taken care of, with the wheelchair accessibility, with short trips, with making sure that the entire city is serviced. There are some areas that certain drivers might not want to go to, and under Portland City regulations, they have us go to all of those areas so that all of the customers are served in an equal fashion. Another question was asked by Representative Kitts, if the local companies with regards to safety inspections and general liability insurance, if there's any type of regulations, and yes, there are. There are regular inspections. There's logs that are kept as such. Things can be reviewed at any time. The city oversees that. There is insurance. One of the drivers made a comment that there is not, and obviously nobody could operate, no driver, no company, without having that basic insurance coverage.
Representative Kitts.
So for clarification, when I asked that question earlier, it was told to me that no, there are not regulations as far as maintenance requirements and so on and so forth. You're telling me now that there are.
There are safety requirements. If you're looking for a list that it says from the city that the tread depth on a tire must be a certain limit or something like that, it's not that specific, but it's general safety requirements. But if you, say, for instance, want to review those for the vehicles and the drivers at Green Cab, we have those in a very specific form. And I'm not sure what Beaverton might be asking of the other company. You also asked about other things that drivers have permits, and there is a certain level of service that's required. There's the regular for-hire transportation review board that needs to look at things such as accessibility. It looks at if the market and the customers are being met. It also looks at the saturation point, if there are more drivers and taxi cabs and things that are available. Somebody said that's not something that should be looked at, that the customer should only be considered, not the drivers, if there is saturation of the market. And that actually impacts the customer service, because if the market is oversaturated, what can happen is that drivers aren't able to make a living, so they may try to take a shortcut. They might try to overcharge on fares. So it really does directly apply to a customer service issue, that the market not be overbalanced, that it not be oversaturated. Also, looking at taxi cabs, they have a separate set of regulations, and the concern is the double set with Metro and Portland in the other four higher transportation areas, such as executive town cars and shuttles and specially attended transportation.
We're getting some feedback.
I also did want to take a moment to answer, to make a comment on something that saddened our entire industry, and that was the death of the taxi cab driver a couple of weeks ago. And his name is Grigori, and many of the drivers who drive for Green Cab knew him, and we're very saddened by that. And is it the driver's fault? Is it the company's fault? Is it whose fault is it? And everybody has been wrestling with that. And I think the only person who is at fault for that is the person who pulled the trigger and killed Mr. Corey. And so while we try to put things into place in the industry, the drivers put things in place to take care of their safety, we try to do as much as we can without overimposing. City of Portland is going to be active in that again. I think we all need to just take a moment and think about who is really responsible for that. And it's not the city, and it's not the regulations. It's the person who pulled the trigger. Another comment that was made is that the general managers of cab companies make more than $125,000. I can't necessarily comment on other companies, but I can certainly comment at the company that I work with and the drivers that I work with. And there is nobody that makes that kind of money, definitely less than half. And if anybody would like to know exactly what I make, I would be more than happy to share that. I also think that this is a simplistic approach to a very complicated issue on serving customers with for-hire transportation in Portland that has a lot of additional needs than Beaverton. And as a resident of Beaverton, I know the difference between Beaverton and the complexities in Portland. So I would just want to conclude by saying that I am here in opposition of this bill.
Thank you. Representative Mabry.
So you said you have applied, you're based in Portland.
Yes.
And you have applied to Hillsborough and Beaverton and Gresham and those,
yes,
those things and be,
yes,
been given a license?
Yes.
And so anyone could do that?
Yes.
Could then the Beaverton company apply to Portland?
Yes.
For a license?
Yes, they can. Everyone can make application, whether they're accepted or not is
okay,
another
is
thing.
There, I'm carrying on with the same question, I hope. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Because we've made application to some locations and we're not granted the number of what we requested. Just because we requested doesn't mean we're granted it, but we had
the I heard some shaking of the heads back. No, I didn't hear. I saw. They weren't rattling. I apologize for that. But I got the indication that wasn't true, meaning that they could apply, but they wouldn't be approved. Do you have any notion why an outside city would not be approved in Portland? Is it that saturation issue, or?
It relates to the saturation issue. It also relates to a lot of other requirements, being in Portland, being accessible to Portland, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week operation is a requirement.
Follow up.
So then what you're saying is if a call went out for a 8-block taxi ride in downtown Portland or one of the Portland suburbs, obviously they wouldn't call Beaverton in to make that. That would not be correct. So they're not there for 24-hour service. That was why. And the other possibility might be then Beaverton taxis hang around the airport or hang around the hotels, and that service is not then available to Beaverton residents. Am I reading more into this than I should, or is that a consideration?
I'm a little confused on part of the question, so if you could rephrase so I know what I'm going to
ask. I'm reminded of a guy that was looking for his contact lens under a street lamp, and they said, "Where did you drop it?" And he said, "Well, over there, but the light's better here." Which leads me to believe that if I'm in Hillsborough trying to provide,
you tie that to taxi
cab. No, but go ahead.
If I'm in Hillsborough trying to provide taxi service to Hillsborough, but I apply for a Portland license so I can get a cab ride back, I might say, you know, the light's better around the airport, or the light's better around the Hilton Hotel, and so there I'm going to hang there instead of being out in Hillsborough, where is what I originally intended. Did I tie that in okay?
Well, let's see.
Yes, I understand, and that is a concern. And if say a company in another location, say Hillsborough, applied for that and received that, they might only service a very small portion of Portland. They're really interested in serving the customers that are in downtown or in the center of the city or in Northeast or who need wheelchair accessibility, or they might only be interested in one segment, and that's not what Portland requires. There are a lot of needs in the city.
Okay. Representative Kipps.
I guess my question is this. I'm a small business owner, as these gentlemen are. I have a landscape maintenance company. I am required to meet a set of standards and criteria in order to perform my business. once I do that, I'm not relegated just to Hillsborough for my business. Nor is there a different standard from Hillsborough to Beaverton that says you have to mow a lawn a certain way, city by city. Nor is there an operating fee from city to city for my landscape company. And I'm trying to parallel the two because, for me, it appears that if we're concerned about layers of bureaucracy and we're concerned about government regulation, we're supporting it by opposing this bill. If we're concerned about saturation, or as you call it, saturation, or those that are opposed to saturation, in my business we call it competition. I have a really hard time understanding the argument to be against allowing people to perform their business that they are licensed to do, that is regulated, that standards are met, as you've said, from city by city. I'm almost wondering why this is a city by city issue, because it's a business. I'm in the business of transporting people from one place to the next. I'm in the business of mowing lawns. I'm in the business of window washing, right on down the line. So I'm really curious why the people that are opposed, so to get to my question, why the people are opposed to it think that this is a city-by-city issue. And I to go with Representative Avakian, quite frankly, I don't believe that just anybody can apply, because I'm sure anybody can apply. Anybody can apply to college, too. Doesn't mean they get in. And we all know that there are certain criteria that allow for discrimination in a lot of different ways. So any time that the bureaucracy known as government is reviewing an application as to whether or not people can conduct business from city to city, I get very leery. So my question then is, why is this an issue from city to city, and why is this such a concern for a saturation standpoint from your perspective?
Well, with the example that you used, different businesses serve different needs, and some of them the cities and the county and the state view as necessary to provide a certain ability to live the life that you want to live and to be able to work, etc. So a lawn service or a lawn and garden service, well, certainly a business that anybody can run, the city isn't as concerned that that business and the services of that business are provided to all of the individuals in the city. For-hire transportation is something that is a more basic need that people need to get their daily necessities and go to work. So in looking at that, that's why it's regulated differently and why I look at those two differently and why I think the city does.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up, Representative Kiss?
I understand where you're going. I would, however, disagree when the state mandates businesses to install certain amounts of landscape at new construction. Therefore, they do care about whether or not landscaping is provided, because they actually would require it. Go ahead.
Okay. And the differences with the cities is cities require different levels of service, different types of populations. And so the cities have regulated themselves differently. And we're looking at making sure that everything has been looked at so that there isn't more regulation than there needs to be, or there isn't a segment that's missed in one set of regulations that might be good for all the cities but misses very important needs of, say, a large city or a small city.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Noonan. How many in this three-year period that Senator Ringo has been working on this issue to help these men have fair, you know, opportunity, equitable opportunity in the state, how many have been approved, applications have been approved for the Beaverton drivers or outside of Portland?
I don't know that.
Who would know that? Excuse me, follow up. Would you know who would know that?
the cities would probably know.
The city of Portland would be able to tell us how many they have.
The city of Portland could tell you how many they've received, and city of Beaverton could tell you how many they received, city of Hillsborough.
I have just one real quick question. Well, two quick questions. One, is there a central dispatch for taxi for hire transportation in Portland?
Each company has their own dispatch center.
Okay. And then the other question is that if a company, say, that's based in Wilsonville or Beaverton or Gresham, wants to apply, and I understand the difference between application and acceptance, but if they want to apply for a license in Portland, is that just basically a business decision that they make? I mean, in other words, they're saying, okay, Portland has these regulations, and I'm going to apply there because I want to be able to, whenever I take somebody from Gresham to the airport, I want to be able to pick up a return fare, and the only way I can do that is if I've got the Portland license, so I'm going to therefore make that application. Is that kind of how it goes, I guess?
Yes, they can make an application to do that. The city of Portland requirements, though, are broader than that. So if somebody makes an application and says what they'd like to do is only transport people back from the airport to, say, Hillsborough or Beaverton, it's unlikely that they'll meet the rest of the criteria.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's see. We've got Marge Kafori from City of Portland and Doug Riggs from Metro. Do you want to come up together, or do we need to keep you guys separated? They're both smiling, so evidently we don't have to keep them separated. However, if they do start going at each other, we can get the state police in here quickly. Whichever one of you wants to start, go right ahead.
Mr. Chairman, let me just point out that I think Marge will go first, but Marge is very happy, as you can see from this contentious debate, to give up this issue and give it to Metro. So,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Marge Kafori, and I represent the City of Portland and Representative Nelson. We are searching for the answer to your question, or maybe it was Representative Kitt. No, I think it was Representative Nelson's question about how many had applied, how many outsiders had applied. And we're searching for that answer, so we'll get it to you as soon as possible. I want to say that the City of Portland is not opposed to transferring our regulation of taxi services to others, but I say that with caveats. And I want to make sure that everybody understands what those caveats are. First of all, whoever takes over regulation of taxi cabs would need to take over the whole panoply of regulation of all for-hire transportation in the City of Portland. We regulate not only taxi cabs, but we regulate executive transportation, which is the town cars that you've been hearing about. We regulate the airport shuttles, which are the 7 to 9 passenger buses, which provide shuttle service to airports on a reservation basis. And we regulate the non-emergency medical needs transportation, and you've heard about that this morning as well. That's the transportation for people who are simply unable to drive their own cars but need to visit a doctor, need to go to the hospital, need to have medicines picked up, and so forth. So we regulate all of those aspects of public transportation, and if we are going to have any spin-off, we want it all to go away and not just be left with some of it. So all of it would have to leave. We want to make sure that whoever takes over the responsibility for us has the skill and the capacity and the knowledge to do the work that we are now doing. And that is a very important aspect of transferring this authority to someone else. So we want to make sure that whoever takes over that responsibility has the ability to manage this very intricate system. First of all, third, I should say, keep track of my own points here. We want to also make sure that the system doesn't go into chaos when it goes to somebody else. And this is not only important for the citizens of the City of Portland. This is important for a number of different players that are involved in the transportation system and depend on a good public transportation system. And I'd like to just point out that those include the Port of Portland. Obviously, the port wants to have a good transportation service for access to and from the airport. The port also is very concerned following 9/11 and the subsequent security issues that they have had to deal with about capacity at the airport. And there's someone from the port who can speak to that for you, but I know that the City of Portland works very, very closely with the Port of Portland on capacity issues and regulations of how many people will be sitting in queues in the back lots of the airport waiting to pick up passengers. Because of security questions, that number has gone down, and that is a matter that the port has to work out with the federal government in order to maintain security. We have TriMet and the counties, which contract, as I understand it, directly for the special needs transportation services that have been mentioned before. These people make contracts for the carriers who will be providing those services, so they need to be involved and they need to be assured that the system is going to work for their clients as well. Metro, obviously, which is the focus of this bill. We have had discussions with Metro. They have to analyze, frankly, whether they can do the job, whether they want the job, whether the job can pay for itself, because they don't have the general funds to do that work and to subsidize it with revenues they have. The hospitality, the convention, and tourism-related industries that do business in the metropolitan area and in Portland, they rely and depend on safe, reliable transportation. Nothing is going to be more detrimental to tourism than to be picked up by an unsafe rattletrap cab driven in an unsafe manner. I know I travel a great deal for my company, and I have been in situations where the cabs are superb. I have been in situations where they are frankly terrifying, and I would prefer to have nice safe cabs to ride in, and I'm sure that any tourist that comes to this city or any jurisdiction in the state that requires public transportation wants the same thing. And also, the people that also need to be involved in this decision are the companies and the operators themselves, because they know the business and they know what their businesses require. So with that, I was a little distressed to hear that the senator does not want to have a work group on this issue. This is exactly what we are coming to ask for. The situation is complicated. I think there are a lot of questions here. The bill is not comprehensive enough to take all of the regulations that I mentioned earlier, and that would need minimally to be addressed before the bill moves on. If this is a good thing to do, then let's do it well, and let's involve all of the people that need to have a seat at the table to comment on whether this is a good idea or not. I'll be happy to answer your questions.
Yes, thank you. Representative Buckley? Thank you.
Hiding behind Mabry here. In terms of appointing some kind of a work group or a task force or something, sounds like there have already been some discussions that have taken place on this issue. What's your sense of how much time do you need? Could you wrap this thing up in, say, 6 months and come back to us with a plan on how to make the transition?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Avakian, we have had discussions with Metro. The most recent activity between ourselves and Metro was our taxi cab regulation manager went to Metro and made a presentation to the Metropolitan Policy Advisory Committee, or MPAC, and that committee made a recommendation to the Metro Council, which has the ultimate authority to make a decision here, that the Metro Council undertake a study of this issue. And I don't mean to eclipse the testimony perhaps of my colleague here, but that is what we did. We went, made a presentation, the MPAC made a recommendation to the council, so as far as we're concerned, I think the ball rests now with the Metropolitan Council.
So the City of Portland is maybe ready to move on something.
We are absolutely ready to cooperate with Metro on studying this issue. And as I mentioned before, we have concerns and we have qualifiers to make sure that whoever takes over this system does it in a manner that assures the kinds of things that we're concerned.
I understand. And just one more question. There's been some testimony today about the potential layering of regulations or governments. If hypothetically you were to shift responsibility to Metro, does the City of Portland intend at all to continue with some type of regulation over taxi service?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Avakian, I think I can answer by saying no. We would continue to charge business license fees for people who do business in the city, and that's just a whole different thing. But as far as whether we would continue to regulate taxicab service along with somebody else who would be regulating taxicab service, I don't think that would make any sense.
Representative Mabry.
Ms. Kifori, I was, while you were talking, looking at your compatriot's testimony as well. And I note on the last paragraph, it says, we believe these questions should be answered in the course of the next few weeks, meaning these are some issues that need to be worked out. I guess my sense is, if we were to pass this out and were to pass the legislative process without an emergency clause, it would not take effect until next January, which would give you at least 9 months to work out those few weeks of details. Could that not be done?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mabry, I'm unable to answer that because it really is up to Metro to work these issues out as much as anything. The ball is really in their court, so I guess Mr. Riggs would be the better person to ask that question. However, now we would have legislation sitting on the books that mandates that they have to do it, whether they think it's a good idea, whether they have the capacity, whether they can afford to do it or not. The law will be there. So it seems to me that those questions really need to be asked first and answered first, and have everybody, as I mentioned, at the table who has a concern that this issue has been done well.
Thank you.
Before we move ahead on legislation.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Kitts.
Welcome today.
Thank you.
I just wanted to state for the record that it makes me nervous, and for the chair's sake, my thoughts, it makes me nervous to take something from the city of Portland responsibility, giving it to yet another form of government, i.e. Metro, and yet you still want to charge the fees for it. So am I understanding you want none of the responsibility but all the money?
Mr. Chairman,
wouldn't surprise me.
Wouldn't that be a fun way to do business? No, that you are misunderstanding. We charge business license fees for anybody who does business in the city of Portland. That is different from a permit to drive a taxi cab. Okay, that is a different subset. The taxi cab business, the regulation of for hire transportation is a subset of something else. That would leave the city of Portland. But business licensing is a different matter.
Follow up. Does that apply to all businesses? For example, my landscape company, which is a registered company in Hillsborough, Washington County, somebody calls me and says, I want you to come rake my leaves. And they're in Multnomah County, or the city of Portland. Do I then have to have a business license to do business in Portland?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kitts, yes, you do. And the amount of money that you
earn...
Not that you've ever done that, I'm sure. The amount of money that you earn in Portland is apportioned relative to the amount of money that your whole business earns. So it's not unlike how the state of Oregon handles out-of-state businesses that do business in the state. Income is apportioned in the same way.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kifori, have you found that information that I requested? How many applications for other taxi drivers have you approved in the last 3 years?
Let's see. I think that, if I'm correct, Mr. Sanderson gave me this note that said 65 cab permits since 1998.
65 companies?
Individual cabs.
Okay, thank you.
And just one follow-up, Mr. Chairman. This is very interesting to me. In that, you know, we don't worry too much about having too much air service in Portland. You know, and all these aviators, you know, have to all compete with one another, the aviation companies. And which always brings to mind quality. Is it your belief, Ms. Kifori, that the quality objectives or the quality program of other cabs companies is so much different than Portland, so much lower standards than Portland? Is that the reason we do not want to include them? Are their safety record is so much worse, or what?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, no, it has nothing to do with that. I meant in other cities in the country or in the world that I've been in cabs in. Any cab company that does business within the city of Portland meets health and safety standards and is required to provide adequate levels of insurance, is required to assure that their cabs and fleets are maintained so that they are safe. et cetera. It has nothing to do, I am absolutely sure, that people who do business in other parts of this state run cab companies that are clean and safe as well. They simply have to make that demonstration to us. That wasn't my point.
Thank you. Mr. Riggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Doug Riggs of PacWest Communications. I'm here today on behalf of Metro, and I would note that Metro President David Bragdon is a former cab driver, so we have some expertise in this area. Mr. Chairman, I wanted to make it very clear that we have reviewed the bill introduced by Senator Ringo. As he mentioned, we met with him on January 24th at 2:15 p.m. and got a copy of the bill from him at that time and saw the bill several weeks later when it came out. We have been looking at this issue, and we're trying to work to review the current Portland taxi regulatory system to see if changing management oversight to Metro would actually be beneficial for citizens, companies, and the region as a whole. I wanted to make clear up front that at this point we have no fundamental objection to the bill, but there are a number of very important questions that need to be answered, as I think the debate has illustrated. One of the fundamental questions has to be, and I think the answer is yes to this question, is Metro the right agency to assume this role? I'd point out at least five occasions where we have taken over programs that had previously been run by other government entities. The first was the Portland Zoo. The zoo was operating, I think, through Multnomah County. It was financially troubled. Metro was asked to take it over and make it more of a regional facility, and we have done just that. We resolved its financial difficulties and now operate an efficient zoo, and I think one of the most efficient zoos in the nation. At one point, we also took over operation of Civic Stadium and ran it for several years. Civic Stadium had operated in the red. We took it over, implemented some private sector management changes, and brought it back out of a deficit into a profit. We gave it up several years ago, and now it's in a different situation. We took over operation of the Expo Center, and both attendance and utilization rates increased substantially over the past few years, and we're currently in the process of implementing a major expansion at Expo. Fourth is the convention center, which we have also seen tremendous growth in more efficient operations. Approximately 2 years ago, we formed a landmark public-private partnership between the lodging industry and Metro, which has led to the grand opening this next April of a major expansion of the convention center, which will bring in significant additional economic revenue for the region. And the fifth that I wanted to point out, and this is perhaps the most applicable to this situation, a number of years ago, if you were a small business person in certain categories, you had to go to 23 different cities and 3 different counties to get business licenses to operate in the region. And we partnered with the city of Portland and our counties and the other cities to offer a one-stop shopping for certain business licenses. And that has been tremendously beneficial. As I point out in my written testimony, the case that we're talking about today bears some similarity to the business license program. And the one-stop shopping idea certainly seems to make sense, especially in light of the testimony we heard from Green Cab earlier. As you know, we have been engaged in a discussion. Marge has some of the paperwork here that we'd be happy to share with you. I think what this illustrates is not simply that we, as Senator Ringo said, need to get off the dime, because I think we have been seriously looking at this. What it illustrates is how complicated this issue really is, and we certainly want to work through it. I would argue or would note that Metro has just undergone a fairly significant change. The council has taken over. We no longer have an executive and a council, and we, as Senator Ringo mentioned, we are interested in working on this bill. I do want to point out for the record that the kind of contentious debate that we're seeing today will be magnified tenfold in the council chamber should this bill pass, and I'm not quite sure that's what the council wants to do, but we'll deal with it. As I point out in my written testimony, we have a number of questions that we think need to be addressed by the committee before this bill moves. Number one, how would the Port of Portland be affected? The chairman mentioned in a conversation that I had with him some concern about cabs not being able to pick people up at the airport after they drop people off. Would this bill allow us to work with the port on regulating those types of issues? Would management by Metro solve the kind of questions that have been answered today? Would we assume the role of regulator and make the kind of changes that were advocated by the first several witnesses? Good question needs to be answered. How would shuttles, limousines, and for-hire services be addressed? If you look at the bill, Section 1, Subsection 6, Line 23, only addresses regulation of taxi services, and I think we would agree with the City of Portland that it needs to be more broad-based than that. another very important question for us is financial. We need to find out if the program is self-sufficient, and if not, that would require us to increase fees to be able to cover the regulation of this proposal. That would obviously have an impact on the people that we've been talking about earlier today. The Metro Charter is very specific about how existing revenues can be used. We have a tax base that was approved by the voters for the zoo. We have agreements on the convention center, and we get funding from the solid waste fees, the tipping fees. And those funding resources are by charter passed by the voters, limited to certain areas. We would not be able to utilize those fees for taxi regulation without a vote of the people. And so we need to answer that question. We certainly appreciate the committee's confidence in Metro. We think we've done an outstanding job in the last few years, as I mentioned in the first page of my testimony. And we do want to ensure that we do our due diligence so that the transfer is done efficiently and effectively with no ill effects for consumers or businesses. As to the question that the Representative Avakian asked, we believe that we can answer these questions in a work group in the next few weeks, not months, but weeks. We would propose establishing a work group with the city, Metro, the Port of Portland, TriMet, Washington County, and if you would like to have legislators on the work group, we'd be happy to have them as well. And we'd suggest, also Marge is pointing out, the hospitality, convention, and tourism people who have a significant interest in this. And if the committee would like to say come back in 1 month or come back in 2 months, and on that date we will look for a proposal, we would be happy to commit to do so at that point. Again, we appreciate the interest. We do not object to the bill. We think that we need to work out some of these details, but certainly it does make some sense up front. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Riggs?
I have a question.
Representative Kitts.
Doug, thanks for coming here today. I don't want to misinterpret anything that I have said thus far to be heard as confidence in Metro, for the record.
Chairman, Representative Kitts, point well taken.
Thank you. You said that you had a meeting with Charlie Ringo, Senator Ringo, dated January 24th at 2:15, I believe. Was that 2003?
Yes.
Were you at either of the meetings dated January 25th of 2002 or April 26th of 2001 when these documents were passed around?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kitts, I was not. And I do want to make another point out again that this is complicated. We have had a study that has looked into this. The council itself has been distracted with UGB expansion issues, not to excuse the fact that this has taken a significant amount of time. And then the other point I'd make is our structure fundamentally has changed. And so the council that you now see that is in charge of the Metro Council was in the position of accepting proposals from the executive prior to January 1, 2003 and implementing those objectives. The council is now in a policy-making role. And so I think you'll see a more responsive council than you saw in an agency in past years.
Can I finish my question?
Yes.
Thank you. I would just like to point out, and I agree with you, and I think everybody in this committee agrees, I think everybody in this room agrees with you, that we want this done properly. I would also like to point out that when it comes to a work group, I would tend to agree with Charlie Ringo, Senator Ringo. It appears this has been a two-year work group, 2 years to get things done. And not until it comes before the legislature, and I don't point the finger at either of you two by any stretch, so please don't take it that way, but I would just like to point out for the members of the committee that it's been 2 years, and it's not until Senator Ringo had to come forward after going through all the appropriate channels, from letters to the city, letters to Metro, letters from five different state representatives, are we finally taking action on this. So if the chair is going to appoint a work group, I would support my chair's decision. I would ask that the work group not exceed the duration of 30 days. I don't know what more there is to discuss.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kitts, if I may respond. You know, as I said, I am not excusing the fact that we've taken some time on this, but Marge Kapori has a number of pieces of paper and documents here that show that it's not something that we have been ignoring. It is not as if we've been asked to look at the issue and simply written back to Senator Ringo and said, no, thank you, we don't want to look at it. There have been a number of discussions. this has been a significant discussion at MPAC. You have a letter from Rob Drake, the mayor of Beaverton, supporting the bill. And I would argue that I think the part of the outcome of the discussions that have taken place over the last several months has been this bill. And so I'm not excusing the fact that maybe we should have done it faster. What I am saying is that we have been engaged in a lengthy discussion and review of the possibility of doing this. And I think if I was sitting here saying today, we need 6 months or 8 months or a year before we can even agree to a bill, or we need an interim task force, then I can understand the committee being frustrated. For Metro, there's some fundamental questions about finances that I think need to be answered. We do not currently have the information on that, and I think we can get that material within a few days or weeks. So I would hope that we could work and come back at a date certain with amendments that the committee could accept.
Mr. Chairman, may I also address the question that Representative Kitts asked?
Yes.
I know that when you're looking at this from the outside, it probably seems like a snail's pace. I do want to say that when we were faced with the onslaught of Town Cars executive transportation in Portland, which sort of mushroomed out of the ground and grew like Topsy, it took Portland and the Port of Portland 3 years of working very hard on this problem to solve the problem in a satisfactory way that was satisfactory to the industry, satisfactory to the port, and satisfactory to the customers. So it does take some time.
Thank you. I would point out that all great ideas take time. I have one question, Mr. Riggs. With regards to the business licenses, the question that Representative Kitts had earlier with regards to that and in terms of his doing business in Portland. So somebody comes to Metro, gets the Metro business license. They can do business anywhere in the Metro area, including the city of Portland. Is that correct?
For certain.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would have to get back to you on the specific details, which I should have done, and I was actually thinking last night at 10 o'clock as I was typing up my testimony that that would be a good answer to have prepared, but I'll have to get you some information. That applies to certain activities, and I'll have to provide the committee at a later point in time exactly what that covers.
The follow-up question that kind of goes with that, and as you're looking at that issue, is relative to the business tax that Portland pays. And if a person wants to do business in Metro at Metro and they pay that fee, is that a revenue stream that's shared with the city of Portland, or is there a Portland fee on top of it? And then it also brings up the question relative to the Portland income tax. So I'm just curious about that. If you can cover that, and maybe the two of you can sort of joint caucus and give us a some kind of feedback on that. I'm just curious because what I'd like to make sure of is that you know, if we that we don't, as was suggested earlier, that you know, we end up just sort of adding another layer of bureaucracy. That's not our intention here. Representative Nelson, did you have a question quickly?
I had a statement quickly, Representative Chair. I just want to say I think this is a this matter is just unbelievable. I think you know, we live in this great country for free enterprise, and to deny it, and something as ridiculous as allowing somebody to take a fare into a city and having to return empty is just ludicrous. It's about as bad as trucks going in, you know, but not having a backhaul or a train or a plane. I just cannot even comprehend this. I think this is way overdue. I think this is crazy. We're not here to write the administrative rules to this bill. So I think we should pass this bill, get it moved on, and then y'all worry about, you know, getting the rules written. Having to, you know, have one more work study to study the study is ridiculous. You need to, you know, we need to pass this bill, and, you know, y'all get together and get on with the procedures, and, you know, let's have free enterprise in this state, and, you know, respect one another in the business environment. That's my opinion.
Thank you. Keith, did you want to? Oh, was there any other questions for? I'm sorry, Representative Mabry.
I guess it was more of a statement. I think they make a valid point. that other for-hire related transportation issues need to be addressed in this. And it appears to me that maybe the bill should be amended to cover that issue. But I also have the concern that if we wait 45 days or 60 days or something like that, we may have missed that opportunity to get it to the Senate and get it through that process, and then we've missed a two-year opportunity. So I'm wondering if that could be done at the same time, or if even if the chair agrees it needs to be amended to take those other forms of transportation into consideration.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I ask?
Representative Kitts?
Along the follow-up to the questions, I would like to know that if attorneys practicing in Washington County that have a client in Multnomah County and have to go to the Multnomah County Courthouse to try their case, if they fall under this same thing as taxi drivers and landscapers would as well.
Chairman Representative Kitts, I would point out, I agree with the committee 100% that it makes much more sense. We're one region. Camps traveling back and forth in various jurisdictions, and I think it makes tremendous sense. I do want to point out that there shouldn't be an assumption just because Metro assumes this position and the role of regulating taxis that all of the policies that the City of Portland has implemented would necessarily change. I would anticipate that what is going to happen is that we would take over the board of taxis or the board of whatever the board is, that we would probably have some group of people who would be appointed to review the current position and the current standards that are imposed, and then that commission would make recommendations to the council. And my anticipation is that would be a contentious process, as we've seen here today. So I just don't want to leave here today with leaving the committee with any false impression that just by passing it on to Metro, all of the problems will be solved. I think it may be a long-term issue that we have to deal with. Having said that, I fundamentally believe that taxis, like business licenses, like attorneys, are the types of issues that can be addressed with a bill like this. So again, we're perfectly happy to come back within a matter of weeks, and we will commit to sitting down and fixing and resolving the questions that need to be resolved. And I would certainly hope that we can pass a bill that all of us could be supportive of out of this committee so we can get it to the Senate and move it quickly.
Okay, thank you. Keith, did you want to come up and say anything on behalf of Port of Portland? You can stay there, Marge. It's okay. Or you can go away, whichever you want to do.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Keith Levitt with the Port of Portland, and I told the chairman prior to this hearing that we have concerns with the bill. I am not fully educated on all those concerns. All I got was a flurry of emails from some of our folks out of PDX. One thing I've noticed on taxi issues, they are very complex, and they certainly have a lot of different points of view, and whether you regulate, how much you regulate that industry is a really big issue, and we have worked through a lot of policies, a lot of procedures with the City of Portland that I know a lot of our folks, when they read the bill, were concerned that that's all now going to be null and void. Having said that, we would agree, we would concur with the testimony from the city and from Metro. We're willing to roll up the sleeves, answer some of these questions, and get back to you so that a bill can potentially move this session.
Okay. Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Levin? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. I had a note here that Senator Ringo wanted to testify again, but he has left. So we'll just look real quick and see if he's nowhere to be found. Okay, that's fine. Here's what I would like to do, members, is I would like to have some representatives from the for-hire industry, and when I say for-hire industry, I mean taxis, executive cars, shuttles, non-emergency transportation folks, everybody is in the for-hire business, along with the Port of Portland, City of Portland, the counties. I'd like to have Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas counties all involved with this. Obviously Metro, the hoteliers, folks from the tourism industry, TriMet, and SMART being South Metro Area Rapid Transit System. all sort of convene a work group and work through some of the preliminary issues, take a look at the bill from a standpoint of, are there amendments that need to be made that we could get done very quickly. I'd like to have you get back with me in 2 weeks. So 2 weeks from today. Today is the 4th, so that's going to be, let's see, 11 and 18. So around March 18th, I'm going to expect to have them come and visit with me. And so around the 18th, 20th, we could look for this bill to be up for a work session in this committee to attach any amendments and then get it on its way. The other thing that we're uncertain about is whether or not there is a fiscal impact to the state that is attached to this. And so what I would like to do is have you folks get together to discuss what some of those issues are. The other thing I would note is that there is not an emergency clause and there is not a particular date so on the bill. So that means that, contrary to Mr. Riggs' testimony about the 91 days, this bill would take effect January 1, 2004. If there is another date that we need to attach into an amendment, we can do that. I would not, I repeat, would not want an effective date to go beyond July 1 of 2004. So that would, in essence, give about 15 months for the work to be done, so that on a date certain, the implementation could occur. So with that, that's kind of the direction that I'm going to give to Metro City of Portland and Port of Portland. If you would just kind of be the conveners of that, I would appreciate it. And then, and as I mentioned, the counties being involved, I think is important. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2667, and we will see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2676. We have with us Representative Shetterly. That's your name, isn't it? Shetterly, yes. And he's been patiently waiting. Thank you, Representative, for your patience, and we will get this puppy moving.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Lane Shetterly, State Representative, District 23, and I bring you a bill that, from what little I heard of your last one, will probably be easier for you to get your hands around.
I hope so.
and there are folks much more expert than I on this bill. This is one that I think would be a real challenge to read if you tried to read this in your committee preparation. It is all legal description, and what this involves is the fact that for a number of historical anomalies, we have basically a non-authorized boundary between Polk and Yamhill counties. And it's the surveyors from both counties have worked on this, as have the boards of commissioners on both counties. And you have before you in this bill a revised and corrected legal description that will clarify the discrepancies of record between in the legal description between the two counties. Sometimes we think we can, but in this legislature we can't move mountains, but we can move boundaries. And this bill will accomplish that, resolve discrepancies for the benefit of these public bodies whose boundaries are affected by the line between Polk and Yamhill counties. And it will also resolve, I think, some issues that you'll hear about involving survey work done on properties that straddle the county line and that depend on the county line as a reference point for those legal descriptions. So I commend this to you as I think we could call this a housekeeping bill. It will have some impact on properties along the county line. I think the testimony you will hear from Dean Anderson is that in the Willamina area, it'll move the boundary by about 3 to 5 feet, and east of Willamina, it'll move the boundary by around 15 feet in some areas, just to correct this discrepancy. But there is no opposition to this bill, certainly that I have heard of. Both counties favor it, and both counties have worked on it to get it to you. It is sponsored by me and your very own Vice Chair Representative Nelson. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'll leave it to the experts to tell you more about the genesis of this bill and what it does, but I thank you for your attention to it today. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to try and answer them, but you'll probably want to save them for the experts.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Shetterly?
Thank you very much.
Representative, thank you very much. Representative Nelson, did you want to come up and testify?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and distinguished members of this government committee, I'm here to support our county commissioners of Yamhill and Polk County, both counties which I represent in my district as state representative, and also to support the testimony that you have before you from that was submitted by Chair of Yamhill County Board of Commissioners Leslie Lewis, and also the testimony from Mr. Anderson of Polk County and Eric Berry, their acting county surveyor, and also the surveyor Dan Lynchide from Yamhill County. And for those of you who may not know, Polk County took a rib from Adams Side, which was Yamhill County, and was formed. Polk County was created in out of Yamhill County, and we have those descriptions in ORS 201-270. And basically, this has been an interesting issue for us, especially in Yamhill County, in that the boundary has determines property taxes and various other legal and there are various other legal requirements. My concern with this was for Yamhill County was how much territory did we have to give up to how many feet of dirt did we have to give up to Polk County. And since I do not know that answer, I guess it will just remain a mystery. However, it's my understanding that this the same boundary has been recognized for 113 years, and so I think it's probably the right boundary, and I want to urge us to pass this bill immediately and make both of these counties very happy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Nelson? I assume Representative Nelson, since you represent both districts, this is not a veiled attempt to gerrymander your district around.
No, but I wish I had known about this back in the redistricting.
Could have worked.
I used it to my advantage, probably.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's call Dan Lynchide. Did I say that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and Dean Anderson and Eric Berry.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Dan Lynchide, Yamhill County Surveyor, and I have with me on my immediate left Dean Anderson, the GIS Department, Polk County, and to his immediate left, Eric Berry, who is the Acting County Surveyor in Polk County. And I've submitted my testimony in writing, and there's a lot of 150-year-old background there, and I believe Donna's poured over it a little bit. She's given you kind of the real nuts and bolts of this thing. And so there's not much point in going into the actual numbers or anything, but I did want to refer you to the second sheet of the second page, the add-on drawing of my testimony. I wanted to talk to you about if you look at where it shows downtown Willamina, under the word 1890, there was a found monument in the 1890 survey, and right underneath that 1890, with the text oriented vertically, it says downtown Willamina. And if you look down there, if you go with the statutory description, which is what we're living with today after 152 years, it says west. And so that would be 129 feet, basically, south of where the line is recognized for the past 113 years, as Representative Nelson admitted. So, and further out west, it's closer to 500 feet, as you can see at the end, at the westernmost monument. So these are pretty pretty big problems, but maybe it's a mountain in a molehill. There is recognition for 113 years of the county line the way it is. Those old cast iron monuments. Everybody in the area that drives across the county recognizes those. They're on the major highways and county roads. And so with that, I think this is just kind of a bookkeeping effort more than anything else. And with that, I'd answer any questions that the committee might have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I guess to add to the statements, I passed out a document to you that really, once again, summarizes it, and I think that's done.
Would you say your name for the record?
I'm sorry. My name's Dean Anderson. I'm the IT director of Polk County.
Thank you.
The alternatives to this are to do nothing. The conflicting boundaries will remain in the historical record. Occasionally, surveyors will use a description that's inconsistent with the commonly recognized boundary. The 15-foot error that's a bit to the east of Wilhelmina is caused by that. We had a surveyor that referenced things that weren't commonly recognized as the county boundary, and it's caused a particular problem. So not doing nothing will propagate those types of errors that can cause confusion and harm. The second place that it can cause errors is just confusion of public agencies. Polk County and Yamhill County both provide services on the citizens who live on that county line. We want to make sure that we offer those services correctly and respond correctly to incidents that may happen out there. Not doing anything brings into question where that line really is, and I'm not sure we want 500 feet of Wilhelmina to be inside of Yamhill County. And that's pretty much where we're at.
Past you have something against Yamhill? I mean, Wilhelmina? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Well put. Let's start a feud right here.
That's right.
Okay.
Now we know why it's never been approved.
I'm sorry, Mr. Anderson. Go ahead.
Fiscal impact is none. Project's been funded jointly by Polk County and Yamhill County, as well as by ORMAP grant funds, government corner funds. Once the legislation has been passed, we'll finish monumenting, add additional monuments that are needed to better clarify it as we've described it. That information will be shared with the impacted public and private agencies. The work's been done. It requires passing the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Eric Berry. I was in Polk County. I don't have a testimony prepared. I'm mainly here to answer any technical questions that may come up to the field work involved.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions, Representative Nelson?
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you for being here. And I want to praise you for your good work. And this is, first, I want to let Mr. Lynchide know that we recognize his excellence. In this fancy work y'all do. I'm concerned that there will be no retroactive taxes due for the people on this property. I don't know if the rates are the same in both counties, but I do have a concern that we won't go back and have to do anything in that area. Or have we been assured of that by the tax assessors of the counties?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I met with our assessor yesterday on that very issue. 3 to 5 foot changes in our rural community will not impact taxes. So I didn't bother to then call and find out if the tax rates were higher in Yamhill County or not. The discrepancy that's the 15-foot error that's in the rural, we would be addressing anyways. It's an error in a survey call. And this helps clarify that issue. So impact to taxes are, from what my assessor tells me, negligible.
Did you want to say anything? Or?
Mr. Chair, not on that particular question, but as we sat down, this is the first time I've seen the printing this morning, and we spotted down on line 14 where it says aluminum pipe and cap monument. That should be brass cap. I asked Bill Penhollow a second ago how we would process that, and he thought that that would be something that Legislative Council would normally take care of.
On line 14, should be brass cap?
Brass cap. Yes, sir.
Okay, and it does make a difference if that is in the language of the bill?
Uniformly throughout the rest of the document, you'll see that particular text.
Okay.
With that omission, it makes it look a little bit strange. It makes you wonder what does that mean? from a surveying point of view.
Oh, I see what you're saying, because like on line 13, it has the same, it has an iron pipe and brass cap monument, and then talks about the, so that having that term brass in there is important.
That's correct, sir. And it, that's the Polk County line. That's 201-270. And then as I looked on 201-360 and I looked at the corresponding fallback on, oh, I think it must be about line 11 or 12 on the Yamhill County side, I didn't see that omission. So I think other than that, but with that, I you know, we just like to see that gets addressed.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. Mr. Chair, if I may, on page 2, line 35, it says aluminum pipe and cap monument.
That's another one.
So we would, is that the corresponding pipe and cap?
Yep, I missed that.
So we would need to have that as a brass cap also?
This thing will put you to sleep after a while. You're right, sir. That should say brass cap.
Okay. And then,
Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm just curious. Is there a reason why there's aluminum pipes and caps used in one case and iron pipes and caps used in another case? It's just a curiosity, I guess. But if it has a bearing, if I look at it and it says iron cap and iron pipe and brass cap for some of them, and aluminum pipe and cap for another. When I read that, I thought, well, it's aluminum pipe and aluminum cap because it's a different material, and I didn't know why it was used differently. I thought maybe it's a surveyor question.
These are, Polk County has used aluminum caps over the years. Yamhill County has always pretty much used brass caps. I don't know why the discrepancy was okay.
But line 11 on, Mr. Chair.
Yes?
Line 11 on page 3 also has aluminum pipe and cap monument.
So that should say brass also?
That's another one. But
now you just mentioned...
should it say iron, Dan, or should it say iron pipe or aluminum pipe? Because it
aluminum would be a non-ferrous, so aluminum is fine if that's what it is. The assumption is that was. Now, I had reviewed the earlier one that was submitted to me through the Polk County Surveyor's Office that was turned over to LC, and it looked fine, but then I understood there were some errors creeped in. So, and I understand how this happens, especially with it's complex and all the numbers and minutes and seconds.
Right.
Well,
right.
Mr. Chair, if he could just, if you men could mark one up, I could submit it for amendment, and we could still pass it as amendment.
Mr. Chair, another possibility is if it is something that was missed during the drafting, it could. I'm not sure if this would qualify as a drafting error that could be corrected by counsel without an amendment. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Line 3 at the top of the page, page 2, there's another one. Same thing.
Well, it's got brass and a cap.
No,
I see. It's towards the end of the line. Representative Gibbs.
For the sake of time, could we just assume that it should remain consistent throughout the entire document and maybe have Representative Nelson go through and make the document uniform with aluminum and brass or iron and aluminum, whichever variation she would prefer for her bill, and maybe either table this until Thursday when it's uniform or just pass it. I don't see the need to go through line by line to correct uniformity here.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Berry, you started to mention something about aluminum and...
At various times, we accept different types of monuments. And as long as we mention in there which type of monument we set, which location, the material of the monument is not really a great issue as long as it is.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious, or maybe it was you, Mr. Lynch. I had said that that one county uses aluminum and an aluminum cap, and one county uses steel and brass cap.
We've used steel pipes and brass caps for more than 30 years I've been there.
Okay.
And Polk County has used alternating. Just depends on what the vendors managed to sell the county. And the county sometimes buys aluminum. Maybe it was cheaper at that time. I don't know.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the only reference is when a surveyor goes out there and is looking for a brass cap, he sees the brass cap rather than the aluminum one. So it's when it's the description is just Somebody's looking at the ground, that they see the right thing and know where they are.
Okay. I guess the question that I have, is it a big deal that whether that is correct or not? Because if it's not, what I'd like you gentlemen to do is go through this thing line by line, and then if you need to have, if it needs to be amended, if you would let Mr. Brennan know, and if you could let him know this afternoon, then we would bring this back for a work session on Thursday, and it would just be a matter of, I don't think I have any opposition to the bill on the committee. And so we could bring it in for a work session. It would be one of those deals, take about 3 minutes to get it out of here. I just want to make sure that the nomenclature is correct, because I don't want to have a situation where the other option is we could go ahead and pass it out and we can amend it on the Senate side.
This would be easier.
Pardon?
This would be much better, I would think, to go through Patrick on this.
Okay. That would be fine. And if you would be willing to do that, then we can, if you'll just take, you know, whatever time you need to this morning, go through this thing line by line, make sure everything is correct. If everything is correct, let Patrick know. Either way, and if we need an amendment, Patrick can order the amendment, and we can have it here on Thursday. If there's no amendments needed, we'll just bring the bill back. And
Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I ask one question?
Representative Nelson.
Do we know who owns these properties that we're taking property out of and giving a little more dirt to the other? Are we aware of the property owners? Have they been notified of this?
The property owner, we do know who the property owners are, and have looked at the descriptions of them to say, okay, this is what all the changes are, and that's why the monuments have been selected that have been selected, so that it doesn't affect the property owners.
So they do concur with this? I mean, would I find that endorsement? I'm just curious and hope they don't have a barn over the line that now isn't going to belong to one of them or the other.
My understanding, the goal of this project was that we did not move any structures or change the legal descriptions of their property, other than the 15-foot issue where the survey wasn't correct. My understanding is that's what we've done.
But we could notify these property owners. I think they ought to know this.
Yes, we can do that.
And do we then pay for them to get a new deed to their property that's realigned?
Well,
is this a take?
You know, I was a little surprised to see this myself. And the reason is I thought we were going by the line that had been recognized for all these years. And then the problem is that some of the descriptions for the properties call to the county line, but they also call to a monument. Well, which controls, the monument that was set in a survey erroneously or the call to a county line? That's a fine, it's a very arguable position, and I don't know, you know, the merits of that argument. I don't know the answer to it.
Well, and that's actually an argument that's not in this bill. That would be, if we need to set up what sets precedence, then that would be something we'd need to do in another statute. What this bill is dealing with is basically just the county line and making that adjustment. There's not going to be a takings here. It's just a matter of if there is a property owner that does straddle the county line now, once that line is moved, they may not straddle the county line, but they still own their property. I mean, we're not taking their property. And in that respect, if there's a difference in tax rates, that's sort of going to end up being sort of something for the counties to duke out and make and decide and I would imagine that both commissions would probably say, look, we're not going to, you know, there's no tax differences and that sort of thing for in the past. And
well, Mr. Chair, I hope not, because Commissioner Probst is about as big as all three of our female commissioners. He would certainly have greater
He could do some damage, couldn't he?
He could make something happen.
Yeah, I know Commissioner Probst.
Representative Nelson, the intention all along has been not to change the county boundaries
for the impact taxes, and that's coming from Mr. Probst.
Oh, thank you.
It's amazing what technology has allowed us to do, isn't it, in terms of being able to find, you know, surveys and that sort of thing. Good old GPS. Okay, what we'll do then, if you gentlemen will take a few minutes now and take care of that and then communicate with Patrick, then we can, on Thursday, we'll move this bill either with an amendment or without an amendment. Okay?
Thank you.
Great, thank you. With that, is there anyone else that wanted to testify on this bill? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2676, and we will bring it back for a work session on Thursday. Thank you. With that, we don't have anything else before us. We stand adjourned.
I was quite curious, Representative.